Welcome to Quarks and Recreation's third episode on time travel. I am your co-host, Doug.
I'm your co-host, Brandon.
And we've got a special guest with us today, my buddy Darren, who knows more about time travel than anyone I know.
Hello.
So I thought we would kick off the episode by just sort of talking about what time actually is, since to get any sense of how to travel through it, it's kind of good to understand the nature of time.
Sounds cool.
All right. I guess we'd start by talking about how time is the fourth dimension, that the normal space and that we experience is up, down, left, right, forward, and back, but we also are moving through time at a steady rate. In fact, space and time are actually part of one singular force or thing that is tied together as opposed to two separate things.
That's fascinating.
We talked about it a little bit on the black hole episode and how it can be bent and things like that. But when we experience time here on Earth, we're flowing at a steady, you know, 1 hour per hour rate. And time travel is the idea that maybe we can alter that somehow through the use of crazy physics. What do you think?
I don't think those physics are possible to be made.
Darren, do you disagree?
Are we getting into that now?
Sure, why not?
It depends on what you mean by those physics. You know, how crazy are we talking?
I guess the first question would be, you know, how can we even affect the rate at which time flows, depending on where we are or what we're doing?
Einstein sure seemed to think so, and I guess this is where we would go into special relativity.
Sure. That's a good place to start.
Now that we've tackled exactly what time is, we can move on.
Sure, we've totally covered everything about the nature of time. It's this thing that we live in.
We'll wrap that up by saying that time is the fourth dimension in this fourth dimensional space-time. It's something that we can't really picture, because anytime you see like a diagram, and Brandon, I don't know if you've seen anything like this in your reading online, but it usually shows like time going up and then like a flat space dimension. Have you seen anything like that?
Not at all.
Did you look at any, like, did you get to see any kind of drawing of what time might look like or a way we can sort of imagine it?
I'm looking at a picture now. It looks kind of like a diamond.
Okay.
And arrows and like a big circle in the center that says mass.
Yeah, I think you might be looking at a light cone. Showing kind of how the three dimensions of space are kind of squished into two dimensions, because there's not really any way for us to picture four dimensions spatially. And then that the diamond shape might be kind of the future that is possible, unless you're looking at something totally different.
It could be a tesseract as well. A tesseract. The tesseract is not the thing from the Avengers. A tesseract is a four-dimensional cube, and the idea is like a square is a right angle showing, you know, four sides at right angles in two dimensions. You expand that out to three dimensions, and you get a cube. And a tesseract is at right angles again, and it's the idea of like you could draw a cube on paper, so you've made a two-dimensional drawing of a three-dimensional object, and you could make a three-dimensional sculpture of a four-dimensional object, and that's what a tesseract is. So maybe that's what you're looking at.
Yeah, on the end of it, it says space-time, and on the bottom it says light with arrows.
I still have no idea what that is.
It's all related.
Yeah. So the real question we wanted to talk about is time travel. So there are ways that we can affect the rate at which time flows. The biggest one is gravity. The closer you are to a big source of gravity, the slower time is going to move for you relative to someone who's far away from it. Because the gravity not only bends space, it also bends time as well.
So you're saying someone on Earth is going forward or backward from someone in space, like closer to gravity?
Well, they're kind of in time. So the idea is, if you had this is what they call the twin experiment. If you had an identical twin and you put them in a rocket and you sent them away at the speed of light, and you brought him back to Earth, for the guy on the rocket, maybe only a year or two will have passed, but for the guy standing on Earth, it could be a decade or more, depending on how long you go away for and how fast you go.
Well, if you sent him out at the speed of light, no time would have passed, actually.
That's true. If time slows down for the person approaching the speed of light. So think about it like you're going in super, super fast, like the Flash, and everything around you seems to go slow by comparison. You would actually age slower compared to somebody who's not doing that.
Well, that's hard to think of.
Let's go back. Let's go back in time.
All right.
Just a second to talk about why this happens. And it has to do with special relativity. What Einstein came up with in 1905. Have you heard of special relativity, Brandon?
No.
Have you heard of the theory of relativity?
Kind of.
E equals mc squared.
I've heard that before from you, actually.
Okay. E equals mc squared is kind of the foundation of this. What it means is E is energy, M is mass, and C is the constant, or what short for the speed of light, because the speed of light is always a constant. And it's squared, meaning it's multiplied by itself once. So it's this E equals M times the speed of light times the speed of light again. So you can imagine this: the speed of light times itself is an enormous number. And that kind of governs a lot of things in the universe, converting mass into energy and back again. But it also deals with accelerating things to the speed of light. But because the speed of light is a constant, the only way you can make time come out the same if you're bending light or slowing it down is for time itself to slow with it. Pretty crazy.
Well, yeah.
Right. Well, let's talk about it like from a classical, Newtonian sense, like, Brandon, let's say that you were standing on the ground and I was on the back of a truck, like a big flatbed truck. You can picture that. I'm moving. You're watching me move at 50 miles an hour. You can picture that?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a radar gun and you clock me at 50 miles an hour.
Okay.
Now, let's say I'm not very good at sports. I don't think that 50 miles an hour is that fast for a baseball to be thrown. Let's say that I'm able to throw a baseball at 50 miles an hour as well. Now, if you had a really good aim on that radar gun, and I was traveling, say, to your left at 50 miles an hour on that truck, and then I threw the baseball at 50 miles an hour, the same direction the truck was moving, how fast would you clock that baseball to be going?
Huh.
So if I were traveling 50 miles an hour on the truck, and I threw the baseball at 50 miles an hour,
like out ahead of the truck,
yeah.
So it's like they're pulling away from each other, but they're
no the same direction.
Oh, the ball is farther away, but it's still in the same like time.
Yeah, like essentially what Darren's getting at is the total speed of the baseball is going to be 100 miles an hour. You were already moving 50 miles an hour, and you threw the baseball out the window at another 50 miles an hour in the same direction. So you add them together. So compared...
But now they're going 100 miles.
Yeah, it would be 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, so for you standing on the ground, you would see that baseball traveling at 100 miles an hour to the left. You'd see me traveling at 50 miles an hour, and that all makes sense to you, right?
Yeah.
Right, it all depends on where you're standing. If you're in the truck, the baseball's moving away from you at 50 miles an hour. If you're standing on the ground behind Darren watching him go off into the distance, the baseball's moving away from you at 100 miles an hour.
Now, here's the crazy part.
Now, yeah, here's where it gets weird.
So instead of a baseball, let's say that I had a flashlight, and I turned the flashlight on. Now, I would see the flashlight... I would clock the speed of the light to be 300,000 kilometers per second. I hope that's right.
186,000 miles a second is the one I know, but it's the speed of light.
So I would see that speed from my own perspective moving on the truck. Now you on the ground not moving would also clock that same speed for the speed of light.
Right. So even though with the baseball example, I added the baseball speed to the truck and got 50 plus 50 equals 100, I can't add the speed of light to the truck where it's where the speed of the beam out of the flashlight is going the speed of light plus 50 miles an hour. It's still going the same exact speed of light. They don't get added together because it can't go faster than the speed of light.
Really?
Yep. Huh. So the question is, how do you make that come out even? It should get added, but the answer is time actually has to get distorted to make it come out the same.
Both time
and distance. So does that mean time already has to happen or something?
No, it means you're actually bending the rate at which time is passing for the person on the truck relative to the person standing on the ground.
Oh.
That's why it's called the theory of relativity. Everything is different depending on where you are. So then we get back to the big question, could we travel through time forward? Yeah. If we go fast enough, we can slow down our aging, and therefore we could, when the trip was over, be in the future.
Okay.
But that depends. Well, of course, that envisions the ability to actually go that fast, but we won't touch on that so much.
So, but we can't really go backwards in time.
Well, there are any.
Okay, so let me address one thing, which is you can travel into the future. Like that we know, Brandon. Right now, we are currently traveling into the future. We're all traveling into the future at the same rate. We could perhaps argue that maybe we're not at exactly the same elevation, so we're experiencing different pulls of gravity, a different force of gravity on each of us. So maybe there's a fraction of a nanosecond difference in which we're traveling through time, but it would be imperceptible. So whether or not we can travel into the future, we know it has happened. There are astronauts who have spent days orbiting the planet, and they're orbiting at a rate that's fast enough that it's actually measurable and detectable that they are fractions of a second younger than they should be. We've tested clocks in airplanes traveling around the world, and we two synchronized clocks, one on the ground, one in the airplane, and when that airplane lands, the one on the airplane is actually has ticked more slowly. So it's actually traveled into the future. Like, this is possible. It sounds crazy, but it happens.
It's not even just possible. It's actually very practical. The GPS systems in your car and in your phone are all based on this principle, because the satellite orbiting the Earth that is helping run your GPS has a clock in it. And it's the difference between the clock in the satellite and time here on Earth that actually enables those devices to help pinpoint where you are.
Okay. Have scientists, like, ever sent someone in the future in, like, a lab?
Well, unless you count labs that are in orbit and they go into the future at a very, very tiny amount. Again, it's not so much that they go into the future, it's that they age more slowly. So if you wanted to go really far into the future and age really, really slowly, like, to allow that to happen, again, you'd have to go at close to or near the speed of light in order to age slow enough to really make a big leap into the future. We're talking years or centuries.
So
no one's been able to do it in a laboratory, you know, with a souped up chair with laser beams on it and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Not that we're aware of. It's traveling into the future at a fast speed. Usually I think would require traveling at what's called relativistic speeds, what Doug was referring to, like some 80%, 90% the speed of light. That you would say go to a distant star, 5 light years away, turn around and come back. And if you went, 80% the speed of light, then maybe like 12 years should have passed for you. But on Earth, maybe hundreds of years would have passed. Like, right. that would be pretty incredible. It would just require a lot of energy. How would you speed up that fast?
Could you survive it?
Right. Would you do it at 1G, what's called, you know, so that you're really only accelerating at the same speed that gravity is accelerating at, so that you're not being pinned against the seat of your spaceship? But it is definitely possible. It's just how much energy would that require, and how would you speed up and slow down? You know, how much fuel would it take? Would you use a laser beam to accelerate you and then slow down on your own, and then when you return, hope that people on Earth are still around who can slow you down? Like, those are the practical aspects
yep.
of traveling into the future.
And then we have to talk about traveling into the past.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
I've seen, I'm like searching and everything, that every rumor I've ever seen was about traveling into the past, but never to the future. Why is that?
Why are there rumors about people traveling into the past, like on the internet?
Yeah, but not into the future. Like, there's no rumor about that, just the past.
Well, I think that leads us into our next segment, which is called The Internet is Dumb.
Internet is dumb.
That is actually
is that a new segment on all the episodes?
That is our new segment. Yeah, we're calling it The Internet is Dumb because the internet is just an echo chamber where really bad things get forwarded around and people keep sending them to each other until people start to believe it's true. I'm not sure why there would be more stories about time travelers into the past, except for maybe the idea that people wish they could go there, that's somewhere that they would be more interested in going.
I have an idea. I think it's that events in the past have happened, so people can claim to have gone back there, and they don't have to be as creative. They don't have to come up with the story of a giant boat hitting an iceberg and then, you know, it's sinking. Like, they don't have to come up with some future version. They can just say, oh, I went back to this thing we all know about.
Yeah.
It's they're just not creative.
I did look at a few internet hoaxes on time travel myself, and there were some where they did talk about, oh, I've been to the future and I saw this happening, say in 2012, and then 2012 rolls around and the thing doesn't come true. But it's sort of like you can make those predictions all day, and if even one of them comes true, you look like some sort of psychic genius. So I don't know. What was the one that you found, Brandon?
There was in 1928 for the George Clark, like the chaplain, like circus thing, and a woman was walking by with an object said to be a phone.
Oh, yeah, I read about this one. Yeah, it looks like this lady in this photograph from the early 1900s is holding a cell phone up to her head.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool picture. I've seen that.
Yeah, the explanation that most people have come up with for that is it's actually not a phone. It's just some other small rectangular object. I think maybe a hearing aid at the time. It was, you know, they just looked sort of different. But it's not like it's an iPhone with, you know, lit up colors.
That's actually video, right? That's film. It's not just a still photo.
I believe it is a piece of footage, yeah, from like the set of a Charlie Chaplin movie.
Yeah, 1928,
okay.
October. Something.
Yeah, well, I think this would be where you would use Occam's razor and say, like, well, which is more likely that someone traveled into the past and was using their cell phone in a time when there was no reception?
Cell phone. Yeah, who are they calling?
And then, the person's
another
crazy
question leading up to that is, everybody says, why the heck is she talking into it? Where's the phone lines? How's she talking into nothing with phone lines?
Right. Remember, for a cell phone tower to work, there has to be a cell phone tower and a server somewhere to process the signal. So if you just take a cell phone into the past, you wouldn't be able to make a phone call on it anyway. Now, maybe there's a second time traveler somewhere else, although I don't know why, out of all the things you could do with a time machine, you'd go back to just before the Great Depression and then make a phone call. I'm not sure.
I would say if you knew that you could get on camera, then that might be a pretty good reason.
I guess that's true. I guess, yeah, although I think I'd want to do something a little more drastic just to make my point.
In fact, well, what if you didn't have a choice, Doug? What if you're this lady, okay, and you see this footage and you say, oh my gosh, that's me. I also just invented time travel to the past. I have this cell phone. because I saw it, I better do it, otherwise I create a paradox and destroy the universe. So that might be the reason it ends up happening.
Yeah, this is where I think time travel gets really fun, is I think once we get past the, like, how could you do it, which is very tough. Traveling into the past involves some very strange ideas, and in theory, you couldn't even travel back in time past the point where time travel was invented. So you couldn't invent, if there was never time travel invented before today in 2014, you could never go back to 2013 or before. At least most people agree that given any known, even remote theories about how you could time travel, you would have to do that. You'd be stuck with that problem.
This addresses, I don't know if you've seen, if this question has come up, Brandon, but, you know, if time travel to the past is possible, then why aren't we seeing time travelers?
Yeah. Actually, you know what, that's that was one of the questions we got in our mail, so I guess we can actually go straight to the mail segment, because we've got a few great questions right on this type of topic. So here we go. She wrote about it. Our first email is from Dan O. He actually has a bunch of questions, but the first one is, if time travel is possible, how come we've never met?
Hold on, wait. Hi, Dan O. I think I might know Dan O.
Yeah. If time travel is possible, how come we've never met a time traveler before?
Because maybe they don't want to talk to you.
That's probably a good enough answer, I think. I mean, we don't know what a person with a time travel machine would do or where they would go. But
well,
again,
against time travel law, you can't interact with people.
Right. That's Back to the Future rules, I think. So what we were saying is before, you can't travel back in time past the point where time travel was invented. So
Yeah. One
of the reasons we might never have met a time traveler is if it hasn't been invented yet, they can't get back here. I think Darren probably could explain why that is.
Well, I guess so. It's not like you can just come up with a flux capacitor and attach it to the back of a DeLorean and then go back to whenever using that like a vessel that goes back in time. I believe most theories on time travel into the past involve kind of like a wormhole. So a wormhole is like a doorway that connects two distant places in space. So like there might be a wormhole that connects the moon. There might be a wormhole on the moon that you step through and you're on a planet near Alpha Centauri. Instantaneously, it's kind of like it's like cheating space. So if you're able to cheat space, maybe you can cheat time. There's a great book called Time Travel in Einstein's Universe by J. Richard Gott, and he describes one theoretical way is to take one doorway of the wormhole and somehow harness it behind a spaceship, whether gravitationally or whatever energy you could use, without collapsing it, and accelerate that end of the wormhole close to the speed of light so that you essentially send that doorway into the future. And then you would have a difference. Those doorways would be separated not only in space but in time. You could step through one and end up in the future, or you could step through the other way and end up in the past.
Yeah.
But in order to go to the past, you need an exit door. So if that exit door doesn't exist, then there's nothing to step out of, and you can't go back beyond the creation of the time machine.
Yeah, like think of it as if time is a river, and you're going to build a dock for a boat.
I love that song.
Yeah. So time is a river, and you build a dock on this river, and you keep your boat on that dock. And then
is it a brown dock?
It might be.
It's a Doc Brown?
So,
okay.
Yeah. So you build your Doc Brown, and you build another dock farther down the river. You can now take a ship or a boat that goes down to from the first dock you built down to the second one, but you'll never be able to take that boat back up the river past the first one you made. That's kind of the idea. Because you this, but instead of a dock, it's a doorway.
Okay. So, that's easier to think of.
Yeah, so it's like you build a doorway that goes into some sort of space-time tunnel. That your door, if you're the first one to come up with it, is the first door. So there's never going to be any door farther back in the past than you. So you can't exit anywhere earlier. So that's what Darren's talking about. You can't really build a ship to go back in time, but you might be able to build a tunnel that will take you from at least the first one into the future and then back to where you started.
Okay.
So that leads us to another time travel question. Amy L. wrote, if time travel exists, can you travel to the future or just the past? And I think we talked about the future is actually a whole lot easier than the past.
Yeah.
I've got another question from Jeremy R. He wrote in and said, what would happen if you travel to a time where you exist? This is if you went back in time and you bumped into yourself.
I think you would, like, mess up, like, space and time somehow.
Maybe. I don't know why. Maybe not. There's a whole lot of theories now. Forget talking about can you do it, but what would happen if you did do it? There's a lot of movies on that topic. So Back to the Future, we've already been kind of touching on. That's a movie where someone goes back in time, screws up causality, where the action he takes somehow prevents his parents from ever meeting, thereby preventing him from being born. So before that takes effect, he has to somehow find a way to get his parents back together and stop that from happening. That's one kind of time travel universe. That's the same one, for example, from Terminator. In the Terminator movies, the Terminator goes back in time to try and change history. So do you think, I mean, the question is, Brandon, what do you think would happen? Would you be able to actually change something? Could you go back in time and kill your own grandfather?
I don't think you can, because what if you're in the future, what already happened. Right. So you're just watching like a repeat of it almost.
Yeah, this is another idea. This is the self-correcting universe, which is like you could go back in time and try to kill your grandfather, but obviously you failed because you're still here. So that no matter what you did, it'd be like if you went back in time to shoot your grandfather, somehow like a bird would fly out of the sky and get hit with the bullet first so that he didn't end up dying.
Yeah.
But what about that bird's grandchild?
You've just completely eradicated that bird's future.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Boy, do I have egg on my face. there's two kind of theories on time travel, and I think you totally understand this, Brandon. One would be the self-consistent version in which, you know, if you can go back in time and affect the past, then anything that you do would have already happened. So if you could go back in time and meet yourself without killing yourself, just go back in time and shake your hand, then you would have remembered doing that already. You would have remembered already being visited by yourself. And in fact, if that happened, you would say, uh-oh, in the future, I better do that exact same thing and say the same thing to me that I remembered being said. So that's called self-consistent, like whatever happens, and you can't change it.
Right. It's like we're at whatever revisions were made to the timeline already happened whatever way they were going to happen by now. So it's immutable. It can't be changed.
And my favorite time travel stories exist in that universe, in a self-consistent universe, and usually in a way that deceives the protagonist into thinking they can change the past or not realizing that something they did is actually what caused whatever. So that's I think that's kind of the most difficult time travel story to write. Time Crimes is a great version of that. This I think Spanish movie, actually from, it might not be from Spain.
There's a really good movie that I'm sure a lot of kids have seen, which is the third Harry Potter movie, The Prisoner of Azkaban. If you remember in that, did you see that one, Brandon?
No, I haven't.
Okay. In that one, spoiler alert, Harry and Hermione have to go back in time one day to see if they can prevent something from happening. And along the way, they have to do things that they kind of remember. For example, they during the first time out, Harry gets hit with a rock, and that distracts him from something. And when they go back in time, he realizes he has to hit himself in the head with the rock to make sure that still happens. So that's an example of that kind of self-correcting story.
Okay.
Is there any time? What's a good time travel movie that you like?
I do like the Back to the Futures, but who doesn't really like those? Those are classics. But yeah. I have a question myself.
Yeah.
What is the most realistic like time travel like idea from a movie?
Ooh, there's a few good ones. First one that jumped into my mind was the original Planet of the Apes. Time travel is not a big part of it, but in Planet of the Apes, which is a movie that came out in the late 1960s, I think 68, Charlton Heston is an astronaut, and he goes into space, you know, very, very far out at the speed of light, and he ends up crash landing on a planet that is, of course, like the title says, filled with sentient apes. And the reveal at the end of the movie, I think I can spoil a movie from 68, is that he's not on an alien planet full of apes. He's actually back on Earth very far in the future because he's traveled at the speed of light. By the time he's got back to Earth, he hasn't aged really at all, but things on Earth have changed drastically over several thousands of years.
Okay.
So that's a good one. Darren, you got one?
Oh, gosh. Realistic? I don't know. I kind of like the Bill and Ted's keys. I think what happens is they bring all these historical figures to the present.
To San Dimas.
To San Dimas. And they all wreak havoc in a mall and they get arrested. And they need to bring them to the theater to do their final project. Which I guess is just showing all these people.
Yeah, I always wondered about that. How did they get an A? They didn't actually do anything. They basically just opened a door and these people in costumes walk out and then it's over.
Yeah, it's just, I guess the effort of hiring all these reenactors would land you an A.
Yeah.
So I think they remember that Ted's dad, he runs the police department or something, and they remember that he lost his keys, and so they decide to use their time machine to go back in time to take the keys before his dad loses them and hide them somewhere that they can find them in the police station. You don't see them do that. They just decide to do that and say, oh, place it over here. And they look, and there are the keys. So it's kind of like one step beyond that is like that's also the reason his dad probably lost the keys in the first place. So that's a great self-consistent part of that story.
I had forgotten about that. That movie just went up a few more notches in my review.
It deserves some credit. One other time travel story. I don't know if this counts as a realistic portrayal, but it's from I think the early 80s, called Somewhere in Time, with Jane Seymour and Christopher Reeve, and it starts with a young man seeing a play, and an old lady comes up to him, hands him a pocket watch, and says like return to me or come back to me or something. He doesn't know what this means, to make a long story short, he goes back in time, meets this woman when she's young, they fall in love, he gives her the watch that she gave him, he tragically is forced to go back to his own present. Now young Jane Seymour has the watch, grows old, and then gives the watch to Christopher Reeve, who then takes it back in time, gives it to Jane Seymour. So that watch is on a closed time loop. It's the same watch. It doesn't have a beginning or end. And that's something that's called a Jenny or a Jenna. And it's a thing on a closed time loop, which is a fascinating idea.
Yeah, it's like, let's say you went back to Thomas Edison and you told him how to make a light bulb so he never had to invent it himself. Then who really invented the light bulb? It's like you've now taken this thing out of time and created exactly what Darren was describing, a closed loop where it sort of exists forever without ever having actually been created.
Right, so either information can be on a closed time loop or an object. Objects are more difficult because they break down over time. That watch would eventually disappear. But information doesn't break down over time.
Yep. Got any other good time travel stories, Brandon? Or movies? Or
from real life?
Yes, from real life.
No. Yeah, no, not really.
Okay. Well, I do have one more question here, another one from Dano. And he asked, tangent universes, the real deal or total baloney? I guess we should talk about what this is, because this is the third option. So option one was you can go back in time and you can change things and they'll have a radically different effect on the present. And you can even create paradoxes by killing your own grandfather, preventing yourself from being born. The second one is the consistent universe that says no matter what you do, you can't change anything. And the third one says if you make a change, what you've created is a branching universe. So you've actually created a parallel world where that change takes effect. But your own home universe, like, so you kill your grandfather. There's now the universe that you come from, that's your home, where your grandfather lives. But there's another universe where your grandfather does die and you're never born. And you can create branches and branches forever based on changing things around.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that, Brandon?
Yeah.
Is that
yes
possible?
Or no?
I'm going to go with no.
Well, we would have no way of knowing, I guess. Sorry, Dan. I don't know if we can answer this because, you know, I guess quantum mechanics might indicate that that's possible. Anytime there's a chance that something could happen one way or the other, there might be a different universe that spins off, whether a molecule spins one direction or the other way.
Yeah.
I think that's a horrible way to put it. But
maybe we can put it into Schrodinger's cat and kind of talk about that. The Schrodinger's cat experiment. So this is a guy, he said, okay, what if you set up a box that you couldn't see inside the box, but you put a cat in the box and you put two bowls of food. One bowl of food in the box, and there's like radioactive material. And if the radioactive material decays, then it falls into the box, and the cat eats the radioactive food and dies. Or it doesn't fall into the box because it doesn't decay, and therefore the food is fine. But here's where it gets weird. What he says is, let's say there's a 50-50 chance of that happening, either way. Before you open the box and look to see if the cat is actually alive or dead, the cat is both alive and dead at the same time, according to quantum theory. So what that really, what it means is anything that can happen is potentially actually happening until you observe it to go see if it in fact happened or not.
I really hope that PETA doesn't listen to this episode.
Well, they can sue Schrodinger. I think he's dead. but that's kind of how that works. The problem with it is science is all about things that you can test. And if you can't actually test anything, then we just have to leave a question mark in it for now. So right now, we don't have a way to go build a telescope that can see into a parallel universe if they even exist. We have no way of testing that at the moment. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else, Doug.
Oh, yeah?
I thought you were going to say build a telescope that could see into the past.
Ooh, that we can do. All telescopes see into the past.
But, yeah, so our eyes see into the past, right? The image that you see of yourself in a mirror is a few nanoseconds old. Any star that you look at is, you know, the light you're seeing is however many light years old as that star is away from you.
Yeah.
But what if you could point your telescope towards a black hole, which, as you guys discussed, Brandon, can bend space and bend light. What if you could point a telescope at just the right point near a black hole so that the light bends 180 degrees and comes back at you? And what if we could see our own galaxy, say, you know, 2 billion years ago? Or if we just had a good enough telescope and knew exactly where to look, we might be able to see Earth, you know, 500 years ago, or we might be able to see dinosaurs 500 years ago. No, that's not possible. But I think you guys know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. I you know, if you were to put a mirror way, way out in space, and you were to bounce light off of that mirror and then watch that light when it came back, it would be old. So if we could find places in the universe where our own light from the Earth was bouncing back to us, we would
naturally
be able to look in our own past.
Or if the universe, say, if the geometry, if the shape of the universe, Brandon, was not kind of the way we picture normal three-dimensional space, and if it kind of, quote, curved back in on itself, like say it was like a video game that when you walked off the left side of the screen, you came back out on the right side of the screen, if the universe behaved that way, which maybe it does, we might be able to look far enough into the distance so that we see our own Earth again, which would be crazy. We would see ourselves in the past, depending on how big that the universe would be before it started repeating. We might be able to see, you know, the Earth. We might be able to see our solar system being formed.
Any other things you want to cover, Brandon, before we wrap this up?
Yeah, there's this picture that I looked at, and it was either a building built in ancient times or the early 1800s, something like that. And on the front of it was a picture of a spaceman, like a astronaut. Is that proof of, like, someone coming to the past, or is it just luck or phony?
That's a great question. This happens from time to time. You see these on, like, Discovery Channel videos of, like, ancient aliens and things like that. It's the idea of, like, well, what if someone went back in time and they met, like, a tribe of Aztec Indians or Egyptians, and they put a hieroglyph on the wall showing this thing that traveled back in time. Again, we wouldn't have a way to test it, I suppose. It's possible, but most likely, like Darren said with Occam's razor, there's usually a simpler explanation, and that's usually the correct one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It doesn't seem likely. It seems more likely that it's a coincidence. You know, how many images on the sides of buildings don't look like a space traveler?
Yeah, and you always have to be careful about things like that. You know, the human mind is, we're sort of evolved to recognize patterns. That's why we're really good at, like, looking at clouds and seeing shapes or making constellations, you know, seeing images in the stars. We're really good at recognizing patterns in things. Sometimes our brains like to fill in patterns like that even when they're not there. So
evolved or designed?
Evolved. And we'll cover that on a few, we'll cover evolution on a future episode. But actually, we're just about wrapping up here. So we did want to talk about our next episode. We're actually doing a two-parter on the solar system. Our next episode is going to be the inner solar system. So from the planet Mercury out to the asteroid belt, and then the episode after that is going to cover Jupiter and everything beyond. So if you have questions, if you want to ask us questions about stuff we covered on this show or stuff for the next show, you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/quarksandrec. You can tweet us at quarksandrec, or you can email us at doug@quarksandrec.com. Find us on the interwebs any way you can. Share us, like us on Facebook, or give us great reviews on iTunes, which we would always love. Thanks so much for listening. And again, huge thanks to Darren for joining us on this one. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, guys. It was a pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
All right. Until next time, I'm Doug.
And I'm Brandon.
And this has been Quarks and Recreation. So long.
Bye-bye.